Good morning. It's Marilyn Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. 4,000 scientists are meeting at the Alzheimer's Association International Conference in Washington to share the latest research about dementia, prospects for a cure or treatment, best ways of managing the disease, or if possible, delaying it. 5 million Americans already suffer from Alzheimer's, a number predicted to double as baby boomers age in the next couple of decades. Much of the research discussed this week is aimed at identifying people most likely to develop Alzheimer's years before symptoms appear, aiming to stall the disease, if not completely prevent it. Several specialists from Johns Hopkins are working to develop such screens. Dr. Paul Rosenberg is Associate Director of the Memory and Alzheimer's Treatment Center at the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine. He specializes in symptoms people show before dementia shows up and in measurements to understand the diagnostic criteria of the disease. And Dr. Rosenberg joins us by phone. Good morning.
Good morning.
With 4,000 researchers trading insights, there are a lot of headlines coming out of this international conference. From your perspective, what is the big news? What should people know about this meeting?
There's a lot of news, and here are some of the themes. The first is, in general, we're working backwards. 15 years ago, we were mostly working with people who we knew had Alzheimer's disease and already had significant symptoms. And we've been working backwards toward people who are at risk of the disease, and we're even now working toward people who have no symptoms at all, where we're basically looking for biologic measurements and other clinical measurements that they're at risk of the disease. And we're working backwards for a couple reasons. One is we think our best chance of making a difference is as early as possible. And what is remarkable is the first time you go to the doctor with worrying about the disease, you may have had it for many, many years. So we feel like you got to catch it early. And we're starting to make some progress. For years, we've known that memory problems are often the first symptom. And one of the things I'm working on with my group is the idea that psychiatric symptoms are also early symptoms. Alzheimer's is not just a disease of memory. It also involves changes in mood. People can become depressed. They can lose interest in things. We call it apathy. They certainly can become anxious. And later in the disease, particularly, they often become agitated, irrationally angry. They're all symptoms of the disease, and they're not just psychological reactions to knowing you have it.
That's what I was wondering, whether some people get, for example, depressed because they feel that their brain is not working right.
Quite a few people are dealing with the diagnosis and are upset, depressed, demoralized because of that. But what's really interesting is there's little relation between these diseases and your insight and awareness of, these symptoms and your insight and awareness of the disease. A lot of people are getting the symptoms kind of out of the blue without realizing they're struggling with the disease.
And do these symptoms, these psychiatric symptoms that you're describing, the anxiousness, the apathy, the depression, do they, you said a minute ago that by the time we see what we consider symptoms of Alzheimer's, people may have had the disease for quite some time. So these symptoms may show up early?
They may show up early. What's been happening in the field, for years we've known that memory problems may be the first symptom of the disease, and now we're finding that psychiatric symptoms can be. We're doing a symposium tomorrow on this. We've coined a term, mild behavioral impairment. It goes along with mild cognitive impairment, which are the memory problems. And in mild behavioral impairment, these are generally older people who have for the first time some of these symptoms. And what we found is that the onset of these symptoms can be quite predictive of the disease. I was working with a large data set funded by your tax dollars, the National Alzheimer's Coordinating Center, which combines data from 34 or so Alzheimer's centers. And I found that if people reported even one symptom, this is quite mild. This is not much different than you having a bad day at the office. If people reported even one symptom overall, or if they reported one depressive symptom, this increased their risk of advancing to Alzheimer's by about 40%. It was a lot. And this kind of risk has been replicated in a few data sets. So we're presenting tomorrow on this. Not only we find the risk not only in people who already have cognitive symptoms, we call it mild cognitive impairment, but even in people who have no symptoms at all, who are quite normal. And we've even found, although we don't have many autopsies, in a small group of folks with autopsies, we find they have more Alzheimer's pathology, even though they're at a very early stage.
So what to do about these psychiatric symptoms?
Well, I'm actually more attracted to lifestyle than standard psychiatric treatments. We don't yet have evidence that, for instance, antidepressants affect the course. They might, but they really might not. I'm suspecting that reduction of stress, things like relaxation techniques, meditation, yoga, tai chi, exercise, kind of standard ways to reduce stress, maybe one of the most helpful interventions. We don't know yet, because we're just starting to define these folks. We also want people to be able to use these as a marker that there might be something going on. It's also a broader issue in the field. We have some new brain scans. We call it amyloid scans. And amyloid is a chemical that is deposited in the brain in the form of plaques in Alzheimer's disease. And a substantial number of older persons with no symptoms have plaques in their brain, anywhere from 25 to, if you're in your 80s, it's up to 40%. And we think these folks are at risk of getting Alzheimer's, and we think, in fact, that's the magic moment where we could do prevention. But we're not absolutely sure. If it does prove to be the case, one of the challenges of amyloid imaging is it's expensive. It's easily $5,000, and insurance is not currently covering it. It's quite a controversial issue. I personally think we're going to start finding low-tech, inexpensive methods that will help us predict who's got amyloid in their brain, and so we can restrict these scans to a much smaller group of people.
That's Dr. Paul Rosenberg, Associate Director of the Memory and Alzheimer's Treatment Center at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, here on Maryland Morning and WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about some of the research discussed at the Alzheimer's Association International Conference in Washington this week. I want to pick up on that. Your colleague, Marilyn Albert, who directs the Division of Cognitive Neuroscience at Johns Hopkins, got a lot of attention with her presentation Sunday about an effective way to screen, a sort of low-tech way in some ways, to screen for who is likely to develop Alzheimer's.
A very interesting study. She's been on the latter stages of a very long-term study. These were folks who were middle-aged and who had a family member who had Alzheimer's disease. So they were a risk group, but a risk group because of family history. And they got lumbar punctures, spinal taps, and they got sensitive cognitive tests, and they've been followed for a long time. I'm not part of the study, and I don't have the details. I think it's at least 15 years. And what she found was that some standard measures in the spinal fluid, measures that we are that we're all familiar with. It looks at amyloid and another chemical called tau. If you looked at that ratio and a couple of standard psychological tests, cognitive tests, you had a pretty good chance of predicting who got Alzheimer's. This is very interesting because these are measures that are available to us. A spinal tap is, you know, it's invasive. It's you have to put a needle in your back.
It sounds pretty serious to me.
You know, actually, what's very interesting about spinal taps is they have less complications and less side effects in older people than young people.
Hmm.
It's because older people have less spinal fluid, and when you take it out, it doesn't cause as much shrinkage. It's a complicated thing. But the thing is, she's been able to do very good prediction with pretty standard tests. And my thought is we may be able to combine these kinds of things, which are much less expensive than amyloid imaging, and are fairly available already. Certainly, they're doable. And we've got a couple of other things. We also may be combining it with subjective memory complaints. Studies from Rebecca Amarillo and other folks at Harvard suggest that actually, if you have a family member who's worried about your memory, that's a pretty good predictor. Another predictor may be new onset psychiatric symptoms. And another predictor may be genetics. We don't have a gene for Alzheimer's that's going to help us predict it in most people. There are rare genes for Alzheimer's that predict it. But really, there's a group of genes, each of which has a small effect. But with advances in genetics, in 5-10 years, this may be a rather inexpensive risk profile.
But we have just a couple minutes left, and I want to ask the basic question of why. If we don't have a treatment for Alzheimer's, what is the value of knowing 5 years in advance I'm likely to develop this terrible disease?
I deeply appreciate your segue, because they're talking quite a bit about new treatments. So just a couple of hours ago, they released some embargoed data. It's Lilly Pharmaceuticals. The drug is called solanezumab. It's an antibody against amyloid. They've had some relatively promising results in early Alzheimer's disease, and they've been moving this along. And the results are somewhat complicated to explain scientifically, but as they followed people further, the effect continued. And they have a suspicion that they have what we call a disease-modifying effect, actually affecting the disease. The controversy with these drugs is not so much whether they work. They work at least to some extent, but whether the effect will be large enough to make a difference in people's lives.
And we have to leave it at that point because we're almost out of time. I really appreciate your giving us this insight into the conference. Thank you so much.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about my favorite field.
Dr. Paul Rosenberg is Associate Director of the Memory and Alzheimer's Treatment Center at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine. He's taking part in the Alzheimer's Association International Conference in Washington this week. We have more information on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. And the Diane Reams Show will have more about the Alzheimer's Conference in 45 minutes. I'm Sheila Cast. Ahead on our show, Bluegrass. Stay with us on 88.1.